Waikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Waikatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are tackling, those invisible strings that kind of pull us through life, the automatic decisions we make without even thinking. We're diving into Charles Duhigg's really influential work, The Power of Habit.
Yeah, it's basically the ultimate investigation into why we humans seem to run on autopilot so much of the time. Duhigg gets right into that fundamental question. Why do we keep doing things we maybe know we shouldn't? And why is changing them just so incredibly hard?
Right. And most of us, I think, we figured the solution to a bad habit is just forcing ourselves to stop, you know, relying on sheer willpower, grit, maybe some self-flagellation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Duhigg argues that's pretty much the wrong approach entirely. He claims that real lasting change isn't about forcing it. It's more about understanding the scientific structure of the habits that already run our lives.
It sounds like a strategic, almost scientific shortcut to changing behavior then.
It really is. And to get that understanding across, you need someone who can translate the science. That's Charles Duhigg. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. Used to be at the New York Times, now writes for the New Yorker.
Okay, so he's not actually doing the neuroscience research himself.
No, and that's kind of his strength to this book.
Yeah.
His authority comes from his skill as a synthesizer, really. He spent, I think, 3 years interviewing neurologists, psychologists, business leaders, digging through complex academic studies.
So he acts as a bridge.
Exactly. A crucial bridge.
Yeah.
Taking these dense ideas about, say, the basal ganglia and making them into something actionable, something
wow.
you can actually use, you know, at work or for getting fit.
Okay, so let's get straight to that framework then. What's the central idea, the premise of the power of habit?
Well, the core thesis is super clear. All habits, personal, organizational, even societal ones, they all operate on one simple neurological pattern. He calls it the habit loop.
Mm.
And Duhigg's claim is, if you can figure out the three parts of your loop, you actually gain the power to systematically rewire behaviors, even ones that seem totally set in stone before.
But wait, if habits are just these loops deep in our brain, doesn't that sound a bit fatalistic? Like, where does free will fit in?
That's maybe the most important point he makes. Yes, habits are neurological, but they are absolutely not destiny. The book is empowering because it shows you how to become the sort of architect of your own loops. Start small, you know, at the individual level, but then zooms out, shows the same principles running huge companies, even driving massive social movements.
So the ultimate claim is that real systematic change is possible once you understand the structure.
Precisely. Once you understand the structure.
Okay, let's unpack that structure then. The mechanics of change. Starting with the absolute foundation.
Mm.
The habit loop. You said three steps.
Yep. Cue, routine, and reward. That's the basic pattern.
Cue, routine, reward. Got it. And this happens where exactly in the brain?
It's governed by the basal ganglia, which is this really old central part of the brain. You can think of the basal ganglia as the brain's automation center. Its job is basically to store automatic behaviors efficiently. Things like driving home the usual route or brushing your teeth.
So the rest of the brain can save energy for conscious stuff.
Exactly. Conserve that precious thinking energy.
And the proof that habits are like physical memory, not just mental recall.
Yeah.
Like that's the Eugene Pauly case study, right? The amnesiac.
Yeah, that story is, well, it's quite profound and a bit chilling, like you said earlier. Pauly lost his short-term memory completely. Couldn't tell you the date, couldn't recognize people he just met. But his basal ganglia were intact. So if someone showed him a specific path, say, to the kitchen in his house,
he'd learn it, even without remembering learning it.
Exactly. He would automatically walk that path the next day, even though he had no conscious memory of ever doing it before. The habit loop was just running the show, completely independent of his conscious mind.
Wow. Okay, that proves habits operate below conscious thought.
Definitely.
So we have the cue, the trigger, the routine, the behavior itself, and the reward, the payoff. But if it was just those three, we'd sort of be robots, wouldn't we? What's the actual engine? What makes the routine automatic?
The engine. That's the key ingredient. Craving. Craving is that neurological anticipation, the desire for the reward. If your brain doesn't learn to anticipate that payoff the moment it sees the cue, well, the routine never becomes automatic. It just stays a conscious choice you have to make every time.
And Duhigg shows how companies figured this out, how to engineer craving.
Oh, absolutely. Brilliantly. He uses the story of Claude Hopkins and Pepsodent toothpaste, way back in the early 1900s.
Right. Hopkins was trying to sell toothpaste. Cleaning teeth was the obvious benefit, but that wasn't enough to build a daily habit, was it?
No, not at all. Hopkins identified a cue that slightly fuzzy film people felt on their teeth. The routine was brushing. The reward was supposed to be healthier teeth, a nice smile.
But that reward is too abstract, too far off.
Exactly. So Hopkins added ingredients like citric acid and mint oil to the toothpaste. That tingling sensation, it had absolutely zero cleaning benefit. But it felt like something was happening. It became the manufactured, immediate psychological craving.
The signal that told your brain, aha, it's working.
Precisely. That feeling became the true immediate payoff that locked the brushing habit into the loop for millions. It's kind of fascinating and a bit disturbing. Effective marketing often engineers a kind of neurological lie.
Okay, so the loop is powerful. It's hardwired. And you can't just eliminate a bad habit. So what is the strategy for changing things?
Use what Duhigg calls the golden rule of habit change, which is basically substitution. You keep the powerful parts the same cue that triggers it and the same reward your brain is craving. But you consciously, deliberately insert a new routine.
So you don't fight the craving head on.
No, you redirect the behavior that satisfies it. You give the brain what it wants, just through a different action.
Okay, I can see how that applies. Like in sports, you mentioned Tony Dungy, the NFL coach.
Yeah, Dungy's approach was brilliant. He didn't teach his players massively complex new plays. Instead, he focused on identifying specific on-field cues and drilling simpler, faster, automatic routines for those cues.
So under pressure, they wouldn't have to think.
Exactly. No thinking, just reacting. They automatically executed the new desired routine. Faster, more consistent. It gave them an edge.
And this same idea, substitution, it scales up even to things like addiction. Duhigg talks about Alcoholics Anonymous, right?
He does. AA is a powerful example. When the cue happens, maybe stress or anxiety, that old trigger for drinking AA provides a replacement routine. It could be calling your sponsor, going to a meeting. Activities that deliver similar emotional rewards. Companionship, feeling understood, maybe just a temporary escape from the pressure.
But it's not just the routine, is it? There's something else needed for it to stick, especially with addiction.
Absolutely crucial. For the new routine to hold up under stress, people have to believe change is possible. And AA fosters that belief, often through the community, the shared experience. That social support sustains the new habit when life inevitably throws curveballs.
Right. Belief in community. Okay, let's pivot slightly. We've talked about individual loops. What about this idea of keystone habits? You mentioned them earlier. It sounds like some habits just matter more.
Yeah, that's the idea. Keystone habits are these small strategic changes that seem to set off a chain reaction of positive shifts. They create what Duhigg calls small wins. These build momentum, making it easier for other good habits to kind of emerge naturally. Things like eating better, managing money better, without you having to force every single one.
And the famous corporate example is Paul O'Neill at Alcoa, the aluminum company.
That's the classic case. When O'Neill became CEO, everyone expected him to talk about profits, efficiency. Instead, his very first speech was all about worker safety, zero injuries. That was his singular focus, his keystone habit for the entire company.
Which must have seemed odd at first.
Completely odd to Wall Street. But think about it. Achieving zero injuries isn't just a wish. It demands systemic change. You have to be able to verify it. So to hit that safety goal, O'Neill forced huge changes. Management had to communicate better with workers on the factory floor. Protocols had to be simplified so they were always followed. Accountability became absolute.
Ah, so focusing on safety inadvertently fixed other problems.
Exactly. Better communication, higher efficiency, improved morale. These were the cascading effects. And yes, profits eventually skyrocketed, but it was driven by that initial, seemingly small focus on the safety habit. It was strategic genius, really.
Okay, that makes sense. What about willpower, then? We started by saying it's not the main thing, but Duhigg does talk about it. Is it just something you either have or you don't?
No, he argues it's more complex. Willpower is finite, definitely. Like a muscle, it gets fatigued if you overuse it throughout the day. But the good news is, also like a muscle, you can strengthen it through practice.
Okay, so you can build it up.
You can. But what truly successful organizations do is they don't just rely on individuals having strong willpower day in, day out. They kind of institutionalize it.
Mm-hmm.
They build willpower support into their systems.
Well, like the Starbucks example, training baristas how to handle those really difficult customers.
Exactly that. Starbucks has the LAT method, right?
Listen.
Knowledge, take action, thank, explain. It's an automatic, predefined routine for employees to fall back on when they're under pressure, when maybe their personal willpower is low and they might otherwise snap or freeze.
So the company provides the structure to ensure consistent performance even when the individual is stressed.
Precisely. It institutionalizes that desired response, that willpower.
The book also makes a point about how rigid organizational habits can become, though. Sometimes to the point where they're dangerous, and it takes a crisis to shake things up.
That's a really powerful and sometimes tragic lesson. He uses the King's Cross Station fire in London as an example. The investigation found this ingrained culture where different departments, like the station staff and the fire brigade, just didn't communicate effectively. Each had their own routines, their own turf.
And that lack of coordination had devastating consequences.
It did. That tragedy created the necessary urgent window for leaders to step in and say, this cannot stand. They had to design new routines, new habits, focused on shared accountability and safety across the entire system.
So sometimes, unfortunately, it takes a shock to break those deeply entrenched bad organizational habits.
Yeah, without that crisis, those old ways might have just persisted indefinitely.
Okay, we've covered a lot. Individual loops, corporate habits, even crises. If we were to boil it down, what are the main messages? Maybe the top three core lessons listeners should take away.
All right, three key takeaways. First, and maybe most importantly, substitution, not annihilation. Stop beating yourself up, trying to just stop a bad habit with brute force. Your energy is much better spent being a detective. Find the cue, figure out the real reward your brain is seeking, and then consciously choose a new routine to deliver that reward.
Sure.
Work with the loop.
Okay, substitute, don't annihilate. What's number two?
Strategic focus. Don't try to change everything in your life at once. It's overwhelming and usually fails. Instead, identify a potential keystone habit. Maybe it's exercising for 15 minutes daily. Maybe it's tracking your spending. Maybe it's that lessons learned summary at work we talked about. Find that one small change that you suspect will trigger other positive shifts naturally. Focus your energy there first. Get the small win.
Right. Get the biggest bang for your buck, essentially. And the third takeaway.
The third one is about what sustains change, especially when things get tough, and that's belief and community. You have to genuinely believe that change is possible for you. And very often, that belief isn't just conjured up alone. It's fostered and reinforced by being part of a group, a community.
Like in AA or even in those big social movements.
Exactly. Social support, shared identity, seeing others succeed, it makes the belief concrete and helps you stick with the new routine when your personal motivation dips.
Those are really practical. The book also has some quite memorable lines, some key ideas that really stick.
It does. Duhigg draws on earlier thinkers too,
like
the philosopher William James, who basically laid the groundwork saying, all our life is but a mass of habits.
That really hits home, doesn't it? Habits aren't just these little side things. They're fundamental to who we are.
Completely. If you want to change your identity, you fundamentally have to change your habits.
And then there's Tony Dungy's insight about champions.
Right. Champions don't do extraordinary things. They do ordinary things, but they do them without thinking.
So excellence isn't about superhuman moments. It's about automating the right ordinary actions, making them routine.
That's it. It makes excellence feel more attainable, doesn't it? It's about practice and consistency, not magic.
And of course, the core actionable idea, the golden rule itself. You can't extinguish a bad habit. You can only change it.
That's the practical framework right there.
And finally, that broader view, how social habits spread.
Yeah, he talks about social movements spreading first through strong ties, you know, close friendships. Then they gain momentum through weak ties, the broader community connections. And crucially, they are sustained by creating new group habits that build a shared identity. Like the incredible coordination and new routines needed during the Montgomery bus boycott. It's the habit loop playing out on a massive scale.
Okay, this is all great theory. Let's make it super practical. How can someone listening right now apply this immediately? Say they want to start exercising regularly.
Okay, perfect example. Stop relying on waking up feeling motivated. That's unreliable willpower. Instead, engineer the loop. First, create a super obvious cue. Maybe lay out your workout clothes and shoes right beside your bed the night before. Can't miss it.
Okay, cue sorted. What about the routine?
Make the routine incredibly simple to start. Don't aim for an hour workout. Aim for a 15-minute walk. Something almost laughably easy, so there's no barrier to just doing
it. And the reward. This is key, right?
Absolutely key. And it needs to be immediate and genuinely enjoyable. Maybe it's listening to your favorite podcast only during that walk. Or having a specific delicious smoothie right after. You're consciously building the brain's craving for that reward. That craving is what will eventually pull you through the routine automatically, much more reliably than just wanting the long-term benefits of exercise.
That really reframes how to start something new. It's about the reward craving, not the activity itself initially. What about in a work context for a manager?
A simple but powerful managerial keystone habit could be introducing a mandatory one-page lessons learned summary after every single project, big or small. It seems minor, maybe bureaucratic at first. But that single routine forces reflection. It forces people to articulate what worked, what didn't. It improves communication across teams. It builds accountability.
So that small habit triggers cascading benefits for how the whole team operates.
Exactly. Massive potential benefits from one consistent small routine.
And lastly, thinking about us as consumers. Understanding these loops makes you see things differently, doesn't it? Like the Target pregnancy prediction story.
Oh, yeah. That story is pretty sobering, actually. Duhigg detailed how Target's data analysts could statistically predict if a customer was pregnant, sometimes even before their family knew, just based on subtle shifts in their buying habits, things like switching to unscented lotion, buying more supplements.
And then they'd start sending targeted coupons for baby stuff.
Right. It just shows how much our habits reveal about us, how predictable they can make us, and how valuable that predictability is to companies.
So awareness is power here.
Definitely. Understanding habit loops empowers you to recognize when your own loops are being, well, deliberately targeted or manipulated for commercial gain. You can be a more conscious consumer.
This has been such a fascinating and really strategic deep dive into how we actually operate day to day. Looking back at all this, what surprised you the most, or what really stuck with you?
You know, I think what surprised me most was realizing how little raw willpower is actually required compared to just strategy and awareness. We tend to think changing habits requires this heroic, superhuman effort. But Duhigg shows it's more like being a detective about your own life, meticulously identifying your cues, experimenting with rewards. The moment you gain that awareness of your own loops, it feels like the power shifts entirely. You move from being run by autopilot to potentially grabbing the controls.
That awareness itself becomes the first step. And I guess that leads to the ultimate message Duhigg seems to leave us with.
I think it does. He concludes pretty powerfully by saying that this knowledge understanding that we can change our habits by understanding and manipulating these loops, it creates responsibility. Once you know it's possible, you gain the freedom, sure, but maybe also the obligation to apply that knowledge constructively, to consciously design better habits for ourselves, and maybe even help reshape the institutions around us.
A really compelling call to action, then, to start auditing our own basal ganglia, maybe starting today.
Indeed. Time to build some better systems inside and out.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accatra Foundation.